This episode is from an evening of poetry recorded at Te Pātakatoe Adam Art Gallery titled Long Exposure, Poetry in Response. Curated and introduced by Poet Laureate Chris Teese, poets from across the motu present new work developed in response to the exhibition A Different Light, first photographs of Aotearoa. Following Chris's own response to the exhibition, the poets and their chosen photographs in order of appearance are Arahia Latham and Mere Te Kaihi Kartai by William M. Hodgkins, Jackson McCarthy and Robert Gant's photograph album, Mary McPherson and the Lockets of Julius von Haast and his wife Mary, Simon Sweetman and the mugshot of Frank Philpott by an unknown photographer, Margot Montes de Oca and Lake Hawia, New Zealand by Moonlight by William P. Hart and Charles Campbell, and Ada Duffy, also responding to the same panoramic photograph by Hart and Campbell. As you listen, you can look at the photographs mentioned in this episode by following the link to the Adam Art Gallery website. We join the recording with Chris Teese introducing the event.
It is really lovely to be back up here on campus. I didn't realise that it's now 20 years since I did my master's in creative writing at the IML, which is mind-boggling because it feels like yesterday. But it is, yeah. This place has been a very, very important and pivotal part of my development as a poet. So it's really lovely to be able to come back up here and read with poets in the gallery. So I was approached by the National Library and Adam Art Gallery to curate this event, Lexham Poets, to respond to the images that you see on the walls here in this space and in the smaller Kirk Gallery, which we'll be moving into later this evening. And I love these sorts of events because it's really interesting to see what the poets pick, what jumps out at them, and how they choose to respond to the work, whether it's very directly or whether it takes them off into some other space. Poetry has been a very big part of my life. I remember being given my first camera by my dad, who wanted to sort of instill his love of poetry in me as well. And the other day, my brother actually found a photograph, and it's a picture of him reflected in a mirror, and I'm taking the photo, and you can see me holding the camera up in the mirror. And we figured that that might have actually been the first photo I've taken. So I'm going to be holding on to that one. It's not a very good photo. It's very blurry and the flash is overexposed everything, but you know, now it means something. And the reason why photography is very important to me, because I think like poetry, it can really distill so much in one image. And much like my creative practice as a poet, I'm always challenging myself to locate that moment of clarity within a photograph, whether I'm behind the camera or looking at a photograph in a wall, on a wall, or in an album. So I'm just going to kick things off with a new poem that I've written sort of in response to wandering through the gallery, looking at the images, thinking about what's captured, think about the role of photography in capturing our history, the story that's told, images. And I think this is actually the beginning of something potentially much longer. So I'm just going to read this little piece that I've written. Take only photographs and leave only echoes. Take bursts of light into a glass eye and tell a story of life in slow motion. For 11 years, I took a photograph a day, an exercise in handing myself over to ritual and its hidden potential. A quiet joy buried in the sobriety of routine, where life unfurls out of the ordinary, like seeds planted to bloom in some distant spring. 11 years of fascinations and serendipity collected in a digital diary, waterfalls, the archaeological layers of posters torn off a wall, a perfect martini washing away an imperfect day. In the moment, they were fast memories for fast times. Now it seems I have the records, but not all the memories. The difference between a record and a memory is what it summons. A record is a prompt, notes scrawled on the back of a hand, a static point. A memory is a dream moving through what was lost, and what is recalled jogs the heart, flushes the cheek, cues the music in your chest. My parents keep a box of photographs spanning multiple generations. I study the faces, including my own, rendered in sepia or faded colour, but recognition does not always let the moment of capture. The lives being forgotten give us the most to remember. Leave it too long, and the light devours everything, like a sentence erased or ambling footprints cut off, whichever way you wish to look at it. Thank you. So, on to the poets. So, I'm very pleased to introduce our first poet, Arahia Latham. Arahia is a writer, creative, and Rongo practitioner. Her poetry collection, Bird Speak, was published by Anaheda Press in 2023, and her short stories, essays, and poems have been published and anthologized widely. Arahia is also an arts columnist for The Post.
Tēnā rā tātou, he mihi nui ki a koutou ki tēnei pō. It's an honour to be here. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Abby. Thank you, Adam, and all of the amazing people that have come together to put this on tonight as well for coming along. It's such an interesting thing to be asked to respond to a piece of work and to choose it as well. I mean, what an amazing gift to be able to wander through this place. And you know, I've been a photographer since I was quite young as well. I was obsessed with it at high school, and particularly took photos of the body and the land and how they moved into each other. And so coming into this exhibition with so much land and so many beautiful portraits was a treat. It's also such a fascinating thing when I think about the role of photography in the history of Aotearoa as well, and thinking about what that looked and felt like. You know, there are so many nameless faces on these walls, and so within that there is a problem. There has been some rupture in the communication of the artist and the subject. And I think that's what I'm most interested in when I started to think about my piece today, was what is the relationship between the photographer and their subject? Because the subject is the one that lives on and is seen and is admired, yet the photographer is the one that usually gets the mana for that. And so as I walked around, I really struggled with choosing a photo, because I didn't know that I wanted to write about something that I didn't have the right to write about, if you know what I mean. And this is something that we amble around a lot as writers, like, is this mine to write? So in the end, I chose a photograph by Mere Te Kaihi Karitai, and it's just here. It's a very, very small photograph, and yet there's something in it that caught my eye. She's a kaitahu wahine. Her smile, her pose, spoke to me, and so I wanted to write into the connection of the artist looking upon their subject and what lasts. So this is called The Backbone of Time, for Mere Te Kaihi Karitai. And this photo is by William M. Hodgkins. Sepia static holds time in a chrome casket. Dust lifts off silver plates. Bronze, wood, and skin immortal, lacing up the corset of time like a backbone becoming an instrument to communicate. But that wasn't the way we told our stories. Our Māori sang through whakairo and moko. And yet, I can hear you singing. Somehow the whakapapa recitation through a mōtiatia I cannot name, and instead you, name circled around stories, in this way of rishin in a place called the web. A web of Māori, perhaps not my heritage and ancestry, not quite a Pepeha, but we scramble to feel something fire. I fear the radiation and preservatives have inhibited our matakite skills these days, have deafened our wairua listening abilities. The fabric of this time is a polyester mix now, fire, and that is just not as permeable to the soft air of our tipuna's breath. There are so many photos of nameless Māori girls. in the hollow curves of meniscus lenses, convex, concave, like our ana and our tara that they trapped us with. I will only whisper my aroha to all of the others because I will never try and guess their story or shame them with my ignorance. Maybe one is my toa or my poa. Maybe one of them is calling through the ink on paper in someone else's collections. Did you know my great tino times three toa? She would have been your parents' age. She was kōkōriria te waiti te kapa, and she married one of the Dutch whalers your papa knew, called James Loper. So maybe you knew their son, my tino poa tieke tione. I wish I could see photos of them. I guess being a mokopuna of a chief brought more attention of those holding cameras back then. Your name at least came with you, and with it your mana. I fear I'm not equipped to say anything of any real status to you, whaia. You are my whanauka, moko of a chief, taua to a mokopuna, that said in the articles on you that you were love and freedom, spiritual with ritual of the seasons like kopu titi. Your mokopuna said there was never an angry or improper word used. Whaia, I am impressed. Maybe, though, I'd like to show you now, wahine can wear trousers and swear and be engineers and poets. And we only wear corsets for kink. We are inked in our moko, and some of our babies are fluent in our reo, singing our waiata like it was never any other way. But we haven't won yet, whaia. Ka whawhai tonu mātou. I can see the fight in your eyes, alongside the warmth of your smile. And yet, who am I to comment on this? When we know that whakapapa laces Māori through the backbone of time, can it really fold through a gelatin silver print? This morning, I went to the hospital wing of the rest home where my papa is, and for some reason, a woman I have never spoken to called to us. Nice toko toko, she called to my papa. And so we stepped into the dance of whakawhanaungatanga, her mouth slack from a stroke that hit last year when she was my age. I swallow as my privilege to come and go is stark and rigid before her soft, oiled feet that refuse to touch the whenua. My whanua kaitahu too, she says. Karetai is our name. I stop, breath like a hooped skirt. It catches in my lungs as if corseted. I'm writing to Merete Kaihi, I say. She smiles as if this was always going to happen, as if we had a choice. She is holding rosary beads and says she is waiting for the morning karakia, whakataka te hou. They need to slow it down, though, she says. They need to know how to say the words so they mean something. I slow down and take in her glazed feet, her bronze wood eyes, her loss, her warmth. I imagine Mere stepping out of time, out of the sepia moment, and watching in awe at the web of it all. The way in which our tipuna are speaking through photographs, whakairo, interactions you could never plan. Yet the ink of moko in our skin or an image on calotype has stained the story into ribbons, lacing up the corset of time, a backbone.
Kia ora, arahia. Amazing that one small photograph could produce such an amazing poem with so many vivid details as well, like all of the senses are sort of incorporated into it. Our next poet is Jackson McCarthy. Jackson is a poet and musician from Auckland who is currently studying in Wellington. He is of mixed Māori and Lebanese descent, and his work has been published widely, including Orangaho Best New Zealand Poems, Landfall, Starling, and The Spinoff. And he currently serves as an editor for both Symposia and Salient magazine. Please welcome Jackson.
Kia ora tātou. Thank you to Chris and to the team at the Art Gallery, especially for taking up my queries about Robert Gant, who's the author of this. I'll point it out.
That one.
it's an album of photographs. And from what I gathered, he was an amateur photographer in the late 19th century who lived sort of in the Wairarapa and also worked as a chemist. He settled there with his partner, Charlie Haig, and was a sort of genteel community man who wrote plays and short stories. And I was delighted to find in his photos a sort of camp sensibility that feels very modern. Though he also deployed the sort of gay-coded tropes of his time in his photographs, including some rather hilariously posed beheading shots, sort of olive-skinned youths frolicking, and other various pictures that allude to classical mythology. So some of those images are referenced in my poem, and so are some of the captions for the photographs in the album over here. But before I read that poem, I thought I'd start with a much older one of mine, which imagines the Māori Atua Mahuika as the boy who won't pay you any attention. And I thought it was rather sort of Robert Gant in its style in that sense. So this poem's called Mahuika as a Boy. He turns his face away from mine. A can of cold drink on a cold night. We sit in the quiet of waiting, waiting for takeaways, salt crystals forming in the night's every crevice, like evaporated sweat beads, skin anywhere you look for it. His lips close in on the lip of the can. I cannot be with, I cannot be without. Even in sleep's black wealth, even in a dream, red with frost, your mouth, your lips, your nose, your hands aflame, covering them. And this is my poem in response to Robert Gant's work called Photograph. Three men in a sitting room, the light touches. I want to see more of this album. Just as I'm vexed by made partial impossible, desires want of itself, for instance, how particulars come to stand for something else, the mind's dark room without damage. So I'm owed to these pictures, Sunday afternoons, rows of sparrows, the posed incidental touches flit a century between us. And yet, for reasons I'll not understand, I'm moved to feel for you, stranger, the wild forest of your suffering. Even as the image fades by what the past occludes, secrets told in interior rooms, the heavy laden with private burdens. Still, I might know what it's like, having travelled, having ruined long days to meet you. I dreamt last night a man I loved dived into black water from a failing dinghy, leaving me to drown. Or was it that I saw you with your head on a block, or posed like a Greek in a poppy field? These fantasies aren't wholly yours. My imagination fails. Cased as though behind glass, years gape the total distance, and ironic lights reveal nothing. Only madness, cruelty. But, Robert, when in your picture I try to tell you of a life to come, a longer exposure of the invisible thinking, after the merely furious march, their long decadent fury down the street, what I see is a face like my own, reflected in confidence. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Jackson. I love that line about a life to come. You know, I feel like sometimes we search for meaning and want the photographs to speak to us, but more often than not, as viewers, we are often speaking to the subjects and the photographs themselves. We are now going to move to our next exposition, which is just behind you. Thank you. Very pleased to be introducing Miriam McPherson, who is a poet and photographer, a photo book maker and art writer. Her poems have been published in print and online journals in Aotearoa, and her poetry collection, Social Media, was published by the Cuba Press in 2019. Her photographs are in the collections of Te Papa, the Dallas Art Museum, and Te Whare o Rehua Sargent Gallery. Mary is currently working on a photo book called One Foot on the Bottom, which uses her mother's family photographs mixed with her contemporary work. Please welcome Mary.
Thanks, Chris, and kia ora tātou. I chose the tiny lockets of Julius and Mary von Haast and the minuscule images inside them. I was smitten by the size of the lockets and the images and the potency of shrinking down your partner and baby and then wearing their images like talismans. I wondered if the lockets would be worn outside the clothing, giving them a fashion edge, or whether they'd be inside, like secrets on the skin. I didn't know anything about Mary or Julius, so Googling was required. Sir Julius von Haast was a major figure in 19th century science in Aotearoa and is still acknowledged today. He was brought here in 1854 to investigate prospects for German immigrants, but stayed on biological expeditions around the country. His roles included being Canterbury's provincial geologist, a university professor, and a botanist who sent many plants to London's Kew Gardens. He sprinkled a bunch of German names on the landscape and fauna. Think of Franz Josef Glacier, Haast Pass, and Haast's Eel. He became the world's expert in moa bones and was instrumental in establishing the museum. So quite a guy. But as usual, there's much less information about the wife. But fortunately for me, Julia Bradshaw of the Canterbury Museum researched Mary's life and put her talk on YouTube. So thank you, Julia. Mary Dobson was the daughter of a surveyor who lived in Littleton. Her great passion was music, and by age 17, she was a good pianist. By 19, she was engaged to Julius, who was twice her age and also loved music. She was reportedly smitten with Julius and remained so for the time that they were married. She had five children, revised Julius's writing for publications, learnt German as well as other European languages. Her life was fairly comfortable, apart from when Julius made bad investments and she taught piano to bring money in. All of this changed for her at age 40 when Julius died suddenly and she was left with very little. She used this event to reinvent herself. She sold everything in Aotearoa and moved to Europe, where she spent the rest of her life travelling the world and being immersed in music and friendships. She died at 69, a wealthy woman. She's remembered as being a strong character. Because they lived in the 19th century and because of the nature of lockets, I decided to write a villanelle. Lockets for Mary von Haast. To keep you is to shrink you against a mountain, small as a bean inside the soft light of its pod. My hopes are sealed, they swing against satin. Inside the layers of a rock, you wish only to be certain. You sift through crystals to pin down time. To keep you is to shrink you against a mountain. Music is my sky beyond the curtain. Inside, its births and duets, and your words to revise. My hopes are sealed. They swing against satin. I learn your language, twist my hair into a chignon. I hold you against my skin. Then hold my own against wind. To keep you, I must shrink you against a mountain. We entertain and celebrate fortune and our gains. I sign my letters, ever your loving wife. My hopes are sealed, they swing against Saturn. As curios cased in gold, our tiny painted faces remain, stiff as photographs where the last memory has died. To keep you is to shrink you against a mountain. My hopes are sealed, they swing against Saturn. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary, for that beautiful response. I'm very impressed that you also wrote a villanelle. Extra credit. We are now going to move upstairs into the Kirk Gallery. So I am going to introduce the next poet, who is Simon Sweetman. Simon is a music journalist, short story writer, and poet. His poetry collections are The Death of Music Journalism, published in 2020, and last year's The Richard Poems, both published by the Cooper Press. You can also find his work on Substack and the Sweetman podcast on Spotify. Please welcome Simon.
Thanks, everyone. I'm going to stand in front of the microphone anyway because, you know, it's a tiny barrier, but it feels like a barrier. I don't have a villanelle for you. I've got a poem about a villain. It's written by a villain too. I came and had a look at this exhibition. It's funny what happens to your poetry career when you give it up. I quit and I started writing short stories, and then I got asked to come here and do a poetry reading. So I recommend to anyone, if you're not getting readings, publicly announce that you're no longer doing it, and then you get invited to get commissioned like Chris to write poems. So I came and had a look around here and I thought, I can't respond to any of this, not because I don't care about it, but because I care about all of it. It was amazing to do. Fortunately, I work very close to here, so I was able to come back and have a look again. And then the thing that kept calling out to me was this guy here, this mugshot of this chap with his arms like this. And so I straight away thought about music, because I often do. One day there'll be an exhibition about music journalism, not from the 19th century, but nearly as dead. And so, yeah, that's where my mind took me. And so I wrote these pages. It's called, a really imaginative title, it's called Cast in a Different Light. Take a look at these hands, David Byrne sang for the Talking Heads in his song Born Under Punches. Well, I'm a tumbler, he continued, born under punches. I'm so thin, all I want is to breathe, find a little space. That was 1980, that was the album Remain in Light. Look here at Frank Philpott, A Different Light, it is 1891. He might also be saying, take a look at these hands. He might also have been born under punches. He was arrested in Foxton. I didn't think you could get arrested in Foxton. Never knew anything happened in Foxton. I used to drive through there one week and not buy a pie, but it would be waiting for me the following week, warm to the point that its gravy became bone once again. These arms of mine, they are lonely, lonely and feeling blue. I did not write that. That's all Otis Redding. He wrote that song as a jobbing musician, singer in Pat Tea Cake's band. It got hacked and he was out front name and lights. And These Arms of Mine was just one of the hits he quickly had before catching the wrong plane. Also, he'd written Respect and Sitting on the Dock of the Bay covered Satisfaction and Try a Little Tenderness, plus so many others. The arms he sang of and the yearning. The dream was to let someone be held in his arms, to have that person near. It was 1964 when he recorded it under his own name. 1962 when he caught the tune in the wind and nailed words down onto the page. Back in 1891, Philpott's arms are stretched out like this because fingerprinting has not yet been invented. In the rap sheet, they mention that Frank had tattoos on his arm and thigh. There is no mention that in jail he wrote a song, I Love Thee. Huddy William Leadbetter, better known as Leadbelly, was a blues guitarist and singer in America. In the 20s and 30s, he introduced many songs to the lexicon, whether written by him or just popularized via his versions. He is the reason we know In the Pines, or Where Did You Sleep Last Night? He also penned the tune Pick a Bale of Cotton. He wrote Midnight Special and Goodnight Irene from behind bars. He would sometimes write a song and send it to the governor, or sing it to him from the jail. It was a way to get off. He was let out one time for good behaviour, which included entertaining the guards and inmates with his songs, and he once wrote a tune as an anthem for a presidential hopeful. Leadbelly's arms were busy on that guitar. 100 years on, we have a government here that just doesn't care and doesn't want people in jail to vote. Their arms are not considered worthy of selecting the right truth. They could only possibly make a mistake once again. Frank Philpott wrote a song in jail, we barely even know about it. More important to profile him as a thug of the age. Look at those arms. When I first saw them, I thought they were calling to be held. That's all this man wanted, someone to hold him. He's crying for a warmth. I thought of the Thompson twins, because I often do, especially their song Hold Me Now, which has held me throughout my life. When I had my mug shot, fingerprinting was well in, so my arms were well out of the frame. But my arms might have struck a similar pose if forced to remain. Many of us have had our photos taken for the police album, always know someone close to us who's still in the book or even still in the cell. Maybe they are writing songs or just thinking of Hold Me Now, thinking of these arms of mine, singing along in their heart, dreaming of their fresh start, head held as high as the government will allow, which these days is low, like a smacked dog, like a told off child, like the nutritional value of a pie in a Foxton petrol station. Old Philpott was done for larceny, a crime involving the wrongful taking and carrying away of something belonging to another person, intentionally depriving them of its use. Government elected to serve the whole country doesn't Philpotts to vote, because they would never get that vote. Our government is intentionally depriving prisoners by the wrongful taking and carrying away of something that belongs to them. Those arms of theirs will never scratch the right box on the ballot paper. Those arms of theirs couldn't possibly write the songs that trickle and ooze from Chris Luxon's playlist. Those arms of theirs are best placed above and behind their heads. Don't hold them now. Don't even take a look at those hands. But if you do, consider the tattoo. It is probably some sign of nothing but trouble. Born under punches, born under a bad sign, born to be bad and therefore never to do good. Not a song in their heart, nor a yearning to be held could ever mean anything when we got bills to pay and cuts to make and mistakes to never own up to. It was the last lot, it was the other guys, it wasn't us, it was them. Funny how you say those lines in a different suit and they put your mugshot on the telly each night. Cast, of course, in a different light.
Kia ora, Simon. Thank you so much for that. It felt like a mixtape or a mega mix of references and ideas in one poem. That was wonderful. We're going to move over to this side of the room now. Our next two poets are going to be responding to the same image. First up, we've got Margot Montes de Oca, who is a poet and researcher of Mexican and Pacifica descent. She holds degrees in English literature, ecology and biodiversity. She was a 2024 Starling Writer in Residence at the New Zealand Young Writers Festival, and her poetry has been published in issues of Starling, Sweet Mammalian, Bad Apple, Minarets and Mayhem Literary Journal. And she is one of three poets featured in AUP New Poets 11, which I think is officially out tomorrow. So keep an eye out for that. Welcome, Margot.
Kia ora koutou. Bookmark. Thank you all for coming. Thank you, Chris, for organising this amazing event. It was really hard to choose a photo to respond to, but the one I chose clearly stuck out to to Ada as well, which is amazing. I can't wait to see what you've written as well. I chose to respond to the photo called Lake Hawea, by Moonlight. And I think what was so striking, it's just there, the top one. What was so striking to me about this was the fact that the moon has been painted into the photo. So if you read the wall text, it basically it won a prize, and then everyone was like, wait a minute. I think there's something kind of strange about this. And it turned out that because of the kind of technicality of photography at the time, capturing moonlight, impossible. So it was discovered that the photographer had painted the moon in. So I was just really struck by the kind of cheekiness of this, so like the audacity of kind of making the moon like an imposter in the landscape, and also how well he pulled it off and how I was completely convinced before reading the wall text. Yeah, I'm always kind of drawn to landscape photography, I think, because it usually has a real personality. And yeah, I was also kind of thinking about the relationship between the kind of mischief and reflection that is occasioned by the moon and the mischief and reflection that's kind of latent in photography as well. So I wanted to write something kind of playful and, in response to that kind of relationship. Okay. See the moon a theatre, shadows of rabbits and seals behind curtains in the contours of its face. See the moon a ghost, its seas pushed out and forgotten, its valleys washed in dimness and secrecy. Below, a man in the scrubland, with eyes like pieces of curved glass, as the moon polishes the lake into steel. He polishes his lens, holds his puppet strings, a conjurer preparing an act of transfiguration. That impossible moon ding somebody else's light. Why shouldn't I paint it in? He says. After all, it was I who saw it last night over Hawea, grey, white, and peeling like the inside of an egg. At blue hour, I saw it stop the lake at its edges, tip headlong into the reeds, laugh at me sideways with a laugh that bounced off my camera and over the water, settling like a skimming stone into the silt. Why shouldn't I fake it? Rub reflection back into the water, pull moonbeams out of my hat, drag them into frame, patter to the audience, distract them from yesterday's sky. See, the moon is a magic trick, sliding water from one glass to another. And moonlight is an illusion, a memory of sunshine, emulsified in a dark room, a feat of time travel, like everything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Margot. Another great poet loves the moon entry into the canon. We have one more poet, and that's Ada Duffy. Ada is a poet who was raised in Otago under the shelter of Pukekura. You can find their work in Starling and Puhiarua. And Ada, like Margot, was also a 2024 Tit in Residence at the New Zealand Young Writers Festival. Welcome, Ada.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Can you hear me okay? Yeah? Okay. Cool. First I want to acknowledge this whare, Pātaka Toi, and the organisers of this kaupapa. Thank you, Chris. And I also want to acknowledge all of the tipuna, who are human and more than human, that are surrounding us this evening, both in this space and the other room we were in before. Yeah, I feel really lucky to get to talk with these works tonight alongside so many other talented writers. So, kia ora. I'm responding to like Hawea NZ by Moonlight. I was also really transfixed by this image, firstly because it's Hawea, where I spent a lot of time as a kid. It's in Te Waipounamu in central Otago. And then when I learned the story about the photo being doctored, I was like, oh my god, my brain was just exploding with the layers of meaning in that assumption that capture an image, capture moonlight, capture whenua, capture the energies within all of these things. So I found it really evocative. The title of my poem is It's Only a Paper Moon, which I grabbed from the accompanying the photo, which I believe is a song. I think Ella Fitzgerald has sung it. Anyways, it's only a paper moon. The lie seems fresh, almost lacquered. Overnight, the observers stormed over valleys with fists of copy paper, glue, and purpose. They mounted, began upon that dark earth. It became shadow, pigment, those razors that were ridges now stripped of blades. On peaks that are shoulders, bodies of water, they collaged upon lake, onto sky, a reflection to sate a figment. And clouds of light, closed eyes, spent after hollow imitation, no mention, needless to say, part muse, essential component. The elucidatory, eternal lampshade, orifice, clock, chimera, calendar girl, cult leader, evasive, omniscient, innocent, wanted. It's only communion with you. Air insofar as breath passes through makeshift foliage. Words are peripheral rivers, are pebbles, caprosma and rock. Vague propulsion toward capture of virginal, pure lake water, eclipsing its depth. There is no gauge, because really, in the process of replication, they lost just what they sought. Moths fixed in layers of thick, white, incorporeal. Otherwise they'd be at rest somehow, in warmth of darkness, ripe in this unknowable, content, gleaming. Kia ora.
Thank you, Ada. Wonderful poem to bring this event to a close, and so great to be able to hear two different responses to the same image, which, is a wonderful thing. Thank you so much for joining us up here at the gallery for this event, and thank you to the poets for reading.